Blog Talk Radio.
Fantastic offseason right now. There's a lot of fantastic Mets stuff to talk about. So welcome to the Metsian Podcast. We can't wait to discuss it. And we're going to get right into it. We're having some technical difficulties with our phone numbers. So if you're trying to call in, we apologize. We'll have to try it in a little bit. But let's go to the people we got on the show tonight. So before I bring on our featured guest, I'm going to go over to Rich Sparago in Connecticut. What's up, Rich? Glad you can make it tonight.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim. Had a last-minute change of plans worked out, so lots to talk about. Excited to do that. The winter meetings sometimes can be boring. These were not. We have a lot to peel back. Looking forward to doing that.
And let's bring on our featured guest for the evening. He's the host of the Past Ball Show, and that is John Fieli. What's going on, John?
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I certainly look forward to discussing a lot of what's happened over the last week or so.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy. Had we done the podcast last night, all of this new stuff would have literally dropped while we were on the show. So it was a blessing in disguise that we were able to move it to Friday. And I don't think, like last week when Jacob deGrom signed at like 10 p.m. or something like that, I don't expect after the winter meetings to all of a sudden hear something about today, but we will be monitoring the internet airwaves just to see if anything does occur regarding the Mets. So without further ado, there has been a lot of stuff to go on, and I think we're going to do this chronologically because an all-time Met is now on another team on his own volition. And, Jacob deGrom seemed to want to sign with the Rangers. This rumor came out at the end of the year, and it's exactly how it played out. A lot to discuss about it, and there seems to be a fraction between Mets fans as to how they're viewing deGrom at this particular point. And Rich, you know, for me, I think it's always too nuanced to immediately start to be the play into the outrage culture, which, it's still an open wound, and they feel like Jake was pouring salt onto that open wound. But let's go right into it, your thoughts on Jacob deGrom signing with the Texas Rangers.
Well, I think one thing we all can agree on, whether there's, whether we're a fractured fan base on it or not, I think we could all agree that he simply just didn't want to be here. He didn't go back to the Mets, give him a chance to match the offer. And frankly, he did what he had to do, what was right for him and his family and his happiness, which is fine. You know, go for it. I think the Mets did it right too. You know, they had in mind that, hey, look, here's a guy, injury history, all of that. We all know it. We will go, if the reports are true, and they probably are, 3 years, 120, basically giving him Max Scherzer money, but for 3 years, which makes sense for a 35-year-old guy with an injury history. And the Mets drew their line in the sand. They have a right to do that, and they made a business decision. They said, we will go this far, no farther, right? DeGrom said, they'll go farther. I'm not particularly – he didn't say this, but seemingly he's not particularly happy in New York, or at least – doesn't feel any particular loyalty to New York to stay. So everybody did it right. I mean, DeGrom did what he has a right to do. The Mets made a business decision. The way when it all came out of the sausage grinder, DeGrom was a Ranger. Okay, you know, that happens. It's not forever, guys. You know, I lived through Tom Seaver being traded. The Nationals lost Bryce Harper, you know, and the Mets won a series after Seaver. Nationals won a series after Bryce Harper. It's not like 1950 anymore. Guys move around. So be it. You know, it what matters now is going forward, not, you know, lamenting the ground. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and that's where I am about it. I guess you could view it, John, as some strange behavior in that he both played it by the book in terms of the way the press conference went and the way he talked about it. Everybody's just like, what, you know, and this happens every time with some of these players where pundits and even fans are like, oh, they should just, you know, tell the truth. It's like, have you not been watching this game and the way it's played both on and off the field for as long as we all, I, you know, it's just like, even like some of the most weathered fans seem to not understand the way this game is played. And so that's my opinion about it. And again, I get the salt on the wound. You know, he's not on Twitter. I guess you could have probably released maybe something through your agent prior to the press conference and prior to the fact that he didn't even mention them until a reporter brought it up. And you see it even with, like, Verlander immediately saying, Houston, I've had the time of my life, you know, like, pretty right after he signed with the Mets, which we'll obviously get to. So, John, what say you?
So, like, I wouldn't look at Jacob deGrom as wanting to play the villain, per se, but I respect the fact that he was seems to be consistent and almost transparent through the whole process. I mean, he makes it known just about when he's starting to throw in spring training, that he's going to opt out of his contract. Everything you hear in regards to him, you know, wanting to explore free agency, and then as, you know, things get closer and he's discussing things with the Rangers, he was very consistent in his interest to listening. And then you hear at the end that he wasn't 100% fond of remaining with the Mets. So I would have had a hard time, in all honesty, guys, if Jacob deGrom tried to spell it the other way, maybe tried to overstate how much he loved it in New York, because I think he's made the point that he really did. He had some good times. He may have created some good memories. He may have pitched the first 9 years of what looks like it's probably going to be a Hall of Fame career in New York. But the bottom line is he didn't necessarily enjoy it here. He didn't love it here. He certainly didn't want to stay. And I don't have a problem with it. And that's what free agency is about. He had the right to find another team if that's what he wanted to do. And I actually respect the fact that he was kind of consistent throughout the whole process. I don't think he changed. He didn't try to appease anybody. Yes, if you're a fan of the New York Mets, like all of us are, we wish we would have heard a lot more, you know, positive things and how much he loved it here. And, you know, I know he created memories that are going to last with him for the rest of his life. But I'm actually more pleased that he was just consistent in the belief that, hey, he wanted to start a new part of his baseball career, and that's what's going to happen in the next, you know, 5 or so years with the Texas Rangers.
You know, some people are curious. You know, this is also happening when the Mets happen to be playing the Rangers next, I think, September. So DeGrom, whether he's starting in that series or not, there's going to be a video, you know, all of this stuff, and people are kind of questioning the kind of reception he had. And I think I think it's like hubris goes both ways, Rich. And us fans, we need to kind of look at ourselves in the mirror. And I said this kind of back in like 2021, even when the Baez thing happened about the Boo Gate, as they called it. That, you know, maybe it's like this is New York, you can't keep it. Like, maybe we all need to grow up and just realize it's a different era, it's a different time. And maybe we need to do better too. But neither here nor there. I think personally, if DeGrom doesn't get a full standing ovation for what he provided to us, especially considering he could have, regardless of the fact that, like, he was dealing with Brody Van Wagenen, who was his ex-agent, like, yeah, maybe the personal connections would kept him there in the first place. But he could have gone earlier, and he stayed through all of this. Even if apparently it might not have been the most comfortable for him. And now he's got two kids. There's so many different factors. And I agree with you, John, like he was consistent the entire time. And I do, like, he's at a different particular point in his life where there's other things to think about other than loyalty specifically to his the team that drafted him. So I'll say, I guess what I really want and what I was thinking before, just talking about the reception, and you can go with that however you want to, but somebody tweeted out a photo of the five starting pitchers from Jacob DeGrom's time here, you know, that was always hyped, and it ended up never really, except for maybe one rotation through, you know, I forget what year it was, but like where all five of them started in a row. So my question for you is this Generation K 2.0?
No, it isn't, because Generation K, you know, really, they got nothing out of those guys. You know, Pulsifer got hurt, Isringhausen got hurt, and he ended up having his best years away from New York as a reliever. So Pulsifer, Isringhausen, you know, those guys never really did much of anything. The Mets went to a World Series with DeGrom and Harvey. So, you know, Matt didn't play out, but DeGrom, Harvey, and Syndergaard, I'll add. So the Mets got something out of those guys. But Generation K was all about, I mean, it was about guys who were hyped and they were good prospects. You know, Bobby Jones was in that same rough time frame a little bit earlier. You know, the Mets had all this pitching coming, and they really went nowhere with them. Whereas the Mets, at least, you know, again, at least they made the playoffs 2 years in a row, an NL pennant. So I don't think you can call it exactly the same. And in terms of the reception, I think it'll be mixed at best. And I think that if he does pitch, when he's announced, I think it'll be – you'll definitely hear the boos. And I think it's for the reason that John was talking about. You've been talking about them. You know, he didn't do what a lot of players do. You know, he didn't do the I miss you, what Verlander did. You know, thank you for all the great years. You know, this is the next chapter for me, but I'll always cherish you guys. And I know he did say that New York had a soft place in his heart. But he didn't really go out of his way to reach out to the fans. He is kind of aloof. You know, Verlander's a much different guy. He's already embracing the Mets fans. You know, he's a fans kind of a guy. DeGrom was basically kind of aloof. It's who he is. Fans will see it as he made a choice. They'll see it as he could have had – he's making $4 million more dollars a year for the next 2 years than he would have – than if he stayed. Now, to us, that's a lot of money. But 33 to 37 million, it's maybe not, right? So they'll see it as he jumped ship willingly for a couple of million dollars more when, you know, it's monopoly money anyway, not embracing the fans, not, you know, really running up and down, thanking the fans and all of that. So I think at best, it'll be 50-50. I hope it is, but I don't see a standing ovation. I don't.
Yeah, not a full standing ovation, and I can see why it's going to be mixed. And, John, I will, let's segue over to Justin Verlander here, and just because Rich did mention him at the end, and I was concerned about another 40-year-old being at the top, but again, it's only a 2-year deal, and he's one of the greatest pitchers in the history of the game. So what's also interesting to me, of course, is the fact that when you're getting Justin Verlander, you're kind of getting a package deal, and basically what people wish, the way Chris Benson and Anna Benson was, it seems like they've perfected, Justin Verlander and Kate Upton have perfected the high-profile sports model couple. But my question, I just want to say it's a package deal, and I can't wait to see what kind of Mets jacket Kate Upton wears. But anyway, let's talk about Justin Verlander, John.
Yeah, listen, I mean, the guy's obviously going to the Hall of Fame. He's had a tremendous career, not to mention coming off of a Cy Young Award last year, which I can't believe I'm saying it. It's actually understated how good he was last year. So, I mean, the thought that, you know, Justin Verlander can't be a number one, you know, in a market like New York City, which, you know, you just mentioned, you know, he's embraced any sort of spotlight. So I think it's pretty obvious he'll be able to handle New York okay. And in all honesty, I mean, it's the number one pivot you could possibly have after losing Jacob DeGrom. I think in the end, you know, the Mets and even Steve Cohen, I think, would have loved a chance to match the Rangers' offer for Jacob deGrom. He didn't get it. And what the Mets did, they immediately went to the next best option. And you can make a case that that option is probably as good as Jacob deGrom in this stage of the game. Justin Verlander pitched the whole season last year. You know, Jacob deGrom pitched, you know, maybe about a full season within the last 2 years. So, you know, I don't know if the Mets could have done any better, especially for the short term.
So I guess I'll also put this together, Rich, with Justin Verlander, in that, you know, we saw a little rust at the end with Jacob deGrom. Maybe it's because he hasn't pitched that much. Maybe this is now the pitcher he is, that he's going to make a few more mistakes than he used to. So my question is, do you think what we saw out of Jacob deGrom in the half a season he pitched just now with a 3.03 ERA when it was all said and done, do you think that's who Jacob deGrom may actually be now?
Well, I think it's fair, Sam, to speculate that that could be who he is, right? When you look at his age, you look at the injury history, you look at the fact that it certainly appeared he ran out of gas at the end of last year. Now, that could be because, again, his arm didn't throw as many pitches. He wasn't in – maybe, you know, he just was coming back from a pretty serious injury, which, by the way, did anybody notice that he stopped himself when he said broken bone in the scapula? He said broken, then he said injured. So it made me think that maybe it really was a broken scapula, like a broken shoulder bone, and why it took so long, because it took a lot longer than initial projections. But anyway, that all that having been said, it could be that he's coming back from a very serious injury and he just, you know, he just didn't have the stamina. That could be it. Or it could be this is who he is. And so let's play with the second scenario. If you're playing with the second scenario, that what we saw, a guy with a 3.03 ERA, or you know, even if it's high twos, low threes, somewhere in there, is that a guy you want to do $37 million a year for 5 years at 35? If this guy is right now a 3.03 ERA kind of a pitcher, and by the time he's 40, maybe that's 4.05, you know, something like that. When I look at it, frankly, I'm happy the Mets walked away. I am. From a business perspective, I'm happy they walked away. I like Jacob deGrom. I love those two Cy Young seasons, all of that. But no $37 million for 5 years. It could work out for the Rangers. Of course it could. But you know what? No. It's not a good risk. And you don't throw that kind of money at somebody, like a girl who just left you and you chase her around, buying her all this stuff, trying to get her back. You don't do that. If he wants to go, go, and you have to make a cold business decision. The Mets did, and I applaud them for that.
I'm completely I completely agree. I'm completely on your side about that. And, Rich, I want to follow up before I go back to John, and we keep just talking about the girlfriend that left us. Justin Verlander, Rich.
You know, love it. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers. Led the American League in ERA, 1.75. A 1.75 ERA, let that sink in, guys. I mean, that's pretty damn good. That's DeGrom-like, you know, 18-19 DeGrom-like. 18, he had an 18-4 record. This guy dominated. There's nothing not to like except the thing that the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room. He's 39 years old. Max is 38. If you're not concerned about that, great, because I am. I mean, I think I'm glad they signed Verlander. I think it was the right thing to do, short-term, high value for an older pitcher, especially someone when you don't have good pitching in the top levels of the minors. It was absolutely the right thing to do from a baseball perspective. And also there's the other thing that his elbow is only a year old, right? So, so he probably will make it through the contract. But again, It's something short of perfect. It's very good, but it's not perfect because, you know, you have to think about you have to think about the fact that you have two guys frontlining your rotation at 38 and 39 years old. But all that having been said, he was the best option out there, and they got him. Welcome to the Steve Cohen era.
Welcome to it, indeed. And it's interesting also, John, that you know you have two pitchers that have never played in New York at all. I think in many ways kind of viewing it as the last challenge of their careers.
Yeah, sure. I could see that. Yeah, you look at the age, which obviously has been spoken about, and it's something that's going to factor into the course of a long season, right? You know, how many starts do you expect both to make? I think it'd be a little stretch to expect them to make 30, 32 starts each over the course of the 2023 season. And I think that's why it is important for the Mets to continue to try to add depth to their rotation. Now, they added Jose Quintana, who I don't love. He's coming off of a very good season. He's coming off of a horrendous season in 2021. But I think he adds the appropriate depth to the back part of their rotation. And I really feel like they need to add another starter just to be able to use, let's say, the other three pitchers that they got, you know, Peterson, McGill, Eliezer Hernandez, as the insurance policy to make sure that the two older pitchers, Scherzer and Verlander, get through the season and are probably at their best in the postseason time. You know, I don't know if you agree, disagree, but, you know, that's kind of my stance on it.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And let's pivot to Jose Quintana. Rich, you know, I loved this signing. I just absolutely loved him. And it is yet another example of the difference between the Steve Cohen era and the Wilpon era, is that it's these little stealth moves. And you know, what is it, $13 million a year, 2 years? Like it's just – it's the type of move we've always craved out of this team, where it kind of goes under the radar, but you really like it.
Absolutely. I mean, you think about it, the Mets have needs. They need starting pitching. You know, neon sign blinking. We all know that. They got Verlander, American League Cy Young winner. They got Quintana. You know, unfortunately, not every pitcher in Major League Baseball is available to the Mets, right? You're only picking – you're not picking from the universe of every guy who throws a baseball in the major leagues. You're picking from the universe of guys who are available, either via trade or via free agency. And Quintana, based on who's available, is upper class. He's upper tier. You know, I mean, 89 and 87, 375. These are his career numbers, of course. Last year, much better than that. Last year, 293 ERA. I think we know that. 6-7 overall, but who cares about win and loss? You know, ERA under 3. So, definitely of the pitchers who were available, the names we've heard, you know, Ross Stripling, we've heard names like that. And he clearly, you know, Bassett's out there, he's solid, Senga's solid, but definitely Quintana is upper tier of who's available. Lefty, which is nice to have in the rotation. Again, the Mets are stockpiling older guys. I will say that, you know, Quintana's 33. So it'll be 34 very soon. It'll be 34 before opening day. So a little bit of a concern there, but he hasn't had, to my knowledge, an injury history. So you roll with it. But I thought it was a great signing. I really did. They got a mid to back of the rotation guy. I would love to have Quintana be the number 4 starter, not number 3. I'd love to get one more, you know, solid arm in there. But by all means, this is a very, very good move. Very good move.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see where they go, whether they bring back Bassett. And, you know, I'm kind of halfsies about him, but you can't always just focus on, especially in a small sample size, the fact that, you know, he didn't perform particularly well down the stretch. You know, I was at a game against the Cubs Monday night, when they ended up getting swept, and Bassett started that game. And he always seemed to, at the end, you know, it seemed to he would hit a wall somewhere around like 4 or 5 innings and give up some runs, you know, and especially to the detriment of the Mets in the Atlanta series, really. So I don't know. I wouldn't be particularly unthrilled, especially, you know, it's similar to with DeGrom, John. You know, he seemed to comment about the environment at the end. I mean, DeGrom didn't. Bassett's a little bit more outspoken, as we know. But, you know, we're not so sure whether it's even his fit as well.
I agree, but I do believe they should prioritize adding another starting pitcher. And, I mean, there are some other options. We've talked about Senga. Yeah, I mean, there's the thought of even Nathan Eovaldi, who I think would be a very good fit. He's got a he has a track record of pitching in the postseason, and yeah, I think that could be a good fit as well. Listen, I liked Bassett last year. I thought he was kind of that take charge type of pitcher. But a lot of what you said, Sam, makes a lot of sense. I mean, he struggled near the end of the season. You don't know if he necessarily wants to be here. So, I mean, I wouldn't be against offering Chris Bassett the contract. I mean, he's got the right to say no, right? You know, if he doesn't want to be here, he could probably take a similar deal somewhere else. But I just think it's very important that the Mets add another starter, hopefully a third type of starter, to be able to use Quintana and Carrasco as your 4 and 5 with the other pieces to provide depth over the course of what's going to be a long season.
And I'm going to stay on pitching, but before we pivot to the relief pitchers, I think it's obvious, you know, even though you're going to get a draft pick pushed back, Rich, excuse me, I think that, like, the strategy is clear that the Wilpons kind of depleted the farm system. By the time they left, it wasn't as good as it had been at certain points earlier in Alderson's reign. And I think that the strategy is clear that they're going with some of these proven veterans on short-term deals over and over again, except for the Brandon Nimmo deal that we'll get to. That's I think, unique unto itself. It's clear what the Mets are doing. It's what Mike always says. They're putting money where they can while they beef up the farm system once more, and start to develop a Mets way of doing things, as we had always talked about, with that whole the Cardinal way type atmosphere. It's clear that's what they're doing. And David Robertson, I'm going to start there before the trade. Last night, 1 year, $10 million. Would have loved him at the deadline. And I do think that he's not completely perfect all the time. We've even gotten to him before, but maybe that's one of the reasons why he didn't want to pitch against us anymore.
Yeah. Well, with David Robertson, I wanted him at the deadline, too. I thought he was the perfect fit for what the Mets needed. Givens had a rough start, and he did okay. Unfortunately, he had COVID. We didn't really hear from him after that. But he settled in nicely. But David Robertson is your classic setup man who can close. Closing experience, but at this point in his career, probably better suited to a setup man, and that's fine. You know, that would have been perfect. We have the best closer in baseball in the bullpen. So, but they didn't get him. The Phillies did. And now the Mets have him, and that's great. 1 year, $10 million, sure. For a setup man, that's the going rate. That's not bad at all. I'm going to say the same thing I've said already. He's 39 years old. And, if he goes through the whole season, that's great. I'm not age discriminating here, but the only thing is I just hope that David Robertson can give the Mets a full season at that age. I don't see a big injury history on Robertson either, if someone does let me know. But, and he certainly held up last year, and there's reason to believe he'll hold up this year. Great signing. I think it's hard to say. It's kind of funny to say it's a value, but I think he is a value at $10 million. And so Mets need him. They have him. He'll slot in perfectly. The only concern, just like with Verlander, 39 years old, it's in the back of my mind. That's where I am with Robertson.
John, how about you?
Well, listen, I think you have to love the signing. He's going to do a lot of things that Rich just said, provide stability in the eighth inning, going to be able to close if, let's say, Diaz can't pitch the third game in a row or something like that. But, kind of similar to my point in regards to starters, I think they need more depth in the bullpen. I mean, just like Rich said, let's say, 39-year-old David Robertson can't pitch a full, 162-game season. He can't appear in his 50, 60 games like we expect. The rest of the bullpen is still looking weak. I mean, they haven't replaced Seth Lugo. They haven't replaced Trevor May. And, they're going to need another, I don't know, it might not have to be a super signing, but somebody that could kind of be a seventh, eighth inning type of pitcher, just to have that type of depth that we've kind of dreamed that the Mets should have. You know, David Robertson, if he was acquired at the trading deadline, would have been that perfect extra depth piece with Ottavino and Lugo and everybody that they had there. Listen, I'm happy. I think for a pitcher that is expected to do what David Robertson is supposed to, I think he's a perfect fit. I think they just need another one like him. You know, if they could bring back, let's say, Adam Ottavino on a similar deal, or work out something with an option for next year, or even give him a second year, I don't know. Well, I don't know whatever it'll take, but the thought of Robertson and Ottavino, which is kind of what I envisioned around the trading deadline last season, I think that's a very good bridge to get to Edwin Diaz.
I completely agree, and you are listening to the Metsian Podcast. Usually at the half-hour mark, we like to give our featured guests some shameless plugging time. So, John Pielli, plug away.
Hey, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. I always appreciate talking to you. You guys, you guys remind me of what I wish I could be as far as, just rooting for the Mets, kind of revolving everything, you know, in regards to the show about the Mets. I host a show called The Pass Ball Show, which I've run for about almost 12 years now. And we talk about ball, but we get into a lot of history when it comes to all sports. And it's something that I enjoy to do. You could check me out if you're interested. Just look me up, John Pielli, on YouTube. Passball Show can be found anywhere you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music. And, yeah, you could, I guess, follow me on Twitter as well. So thanks for having me on, and thanks for giving me a second to talk about myself.
Yeah, for sure, man. And, Rich, let's go right to the next relief pitcher piece that they got, which is Brooks Raley, I believe is how you pronounce it. And we just gave up a high A player, Keyshawn Askew. High A affiliate, because, you know, I'm always like, what are they calling it these days? Right, there's only low A, high A, double A, and triple A now. That's right. So he has really performed well over his minor league career, 2.27 ERA. Last year he had a 2.44 ERA in 18 games, but he came into 18 games, but he only started 8 times, 66 innings he pitched. Nice whip, too, 107. So what do you think about this move? This guy looks like he could be a very, very good pitcher down the road. But is it just something like, you know, could come back to burn them, or do you like the move?
No, I think they had to do it. You know, I think it's one of those things. It's like Verlander. They had to go out and get quality. I mean, if you needed any more proof that the Mets are a win now team, just look at what they've done the past week, right? They are a win now team. I think Cohen said 3 to 5 years. I think he wants to push to 3. I think he wants it this year. It's clear by the actions of the organization. So yeah, you give up a high A player who, from my colleagues at MMO who do the minor league stuff, they were high on Askew. So maybe it's a big price to pay. That will play out in the next 2 or 3 years, but the Mets are trying to win now. Raley's a guy who's a crossover. He gets righties out as well, you know, slider guy. So reminds a lot of people of Aaron Loop. Devastating on lefties, at least most recently he has been. And he crosses over, able to get righties out as well, particularly important in the current game with the 3-batter minimum. So, again, it's one of those things that it probably worked out for everybody. You know, the Mets need a guy now. They need a quality guy now. Since they need so many bullpen pieces, they needed a guy who could cross over. They got that guy. He's going to be 35 in the middle of the season, so sure, that's a thing, but the Mets aren't looking for this guy to be effective 10 years from now. They need somebody now. They need somebody who can get lefties and righties out. They got that guy. The Rays made a trade. They see a 35-year-old guy, and they can get a quality high A guy. So they did what was right for them. Probably a workout for them too. The proof will be in the pudding on this one. You know, if the Mets are going to be world champions this year, let's hope, and Raley's a part of it, then the Mets no matter what Askew does after that, the Mets will have gotten what they needed. So I'm totally fine with this move. You know, the Mets, I don't think the Mets fleeced the Rays by any stretch of the imagination, but the Mets got what they needed right now, and they're a right-now team.
And, John, I think you can kind of tell why the Rays would be all over a player like Keyshawn.
No, of course. And, to make kind of a corny statement that's made very often, I mean, it kind of reminds me of an old-fashioned baseball trade. You know, I think both teams are getting something that they could really use. You know, the Rays have had a history of, you know, turning their experienced players into players that end up being part of their future. And it's kind of the way the hamster wheel spins over there. And, you know, I look at Raleigh, and I kind of think a little bit of Aaron Loop a couple of years ago. Now, the ability to get both righties and lefties out, I don't know if he's going to pitch to a one or so ERA like Loop did. But if he could have, I don't know, even like three-quarters of the impact that Aaron Loop had in the Mets bullpen a couple of years ago, and then this turns out to be a very good deal for the Mets. And, you know, listen, you got to give up something to get something. You know, to me, Askew at some point will be pitching in the major leagues in some way, shape, or form. Listen, I wish him the best, but it's, you know, it's the price for doing business. And I did like the trade from the Mets end, and I'm sure the Rays are going to be happy with what they ended up getting too.
I agree. So now we just wait to see if they, what they do next in terms of the starting pitching as well as the relief corps. So let's go to the only offensive piece I believe that they picked up this year, other than the Daniel Vogelback $1.5 million option, Brandon Nimmo. And, Rich, obviously this bucks the trend of giving out these short-term contracts, but, you know, when – basically, what Brandon Nimmo is connects the last era to this current one, and it he seems to be coming together all at once right now. It makes sense for a deal like this that both parties would want to keep together.
Agreed. The Mets, again, they have so many things they had to do. Center field's a big part of a team. They didn't want to have to try and buy a new center fielder. Then you have to figure out, do you want to fork over enormous amounts of players in a trade or money to get a guy who goes both ways? Do you, offense, defense? Do you want to go defense and try to build the offense somewhere else? Do you want to move McNeil to the outfield and try to get an infielder? All those, chess pieces would have to move. Or you could just bring back Nimmo and a known commodity, a guy who – until this season had an elite on-base percentage, still very good at .367 in 2022, but not elite, not over .400. But a guy who gets on base, can pop a few home runs. He has become a very good defensive outfielder. And so he's a quality player and would have left an enormous hole to fill. And to retain him, they had to pay the market rate, and they paid a lot. I mean, frankly, I'm glad he's back. I would have done the same thing. I do think this is a contract that won't age well. I think in years 6, 7, and 8, you're paying this guy $20 million. He's not a power hitter that you could make a DH. He's not that player. You know, he's a guy who, although he doesn't steal bases, paradoxically, he doesn't steal bases, but he runs very well. Very good defender, on base kind of a guy, that kind of thing. And when he's on base and running the bases, he runs the bases very well. So it's not like you could say, when he gets to be 35, 36, we'll make him a DH. Not really. He doesn't profile that way. So, but to get Brandon Nimmo back and not create that enormous hole that you've had to either spend lots of money or move a lot of people around to fill, paid the market rate, which is a long-term deal. And, they did what they had to do. It's another one of those things that did the right thing. In the end, it may, we'll evaluate it 6 years from now. We'll worry about that then. Maybe the Mets have two world championships by then. But the contract probably won't age well, but for now it was the right thing to do.
Your mouth to God's ears when it comes to whether Brandon Nimmo has two rings at the end of those 8 years. Oh, wow, wouldn't that be amazing? This was Alderson's first pick with Podesta, and they went with somebody who had never played even high school baseball, and they took him before he even got a chance to go to college. Is Brandon Nimmo going to be a lifetime Met? He might have some years in him at the end, and who knows? Maybe he'll go to Colorado to finish. So, you know, all the speculation, who knows what the future holds. It makes sense that Brandon Nimmo and the Mets would continue this relationship.
I looked at it from two major points. Number one is kind of what we talked about, Jacob deGrom before, but in reverse. He kind of got the sense that Brandon Nimmo kind of wanted to be in New York, kind of wanted to remain there. And maybe it's just his personality, you know, the fact that he's got this smile on his face, hustles, it gives you everything that as a fan you want to see on the baseball field. Maybe it doesn't have a ton of power, but you know you get 100% effort all the time, as hard as he has worked to become an everyday center fielder, which how many times did you hear years ago, hey, he's just a fourth outfielder. He's not really an everyday player. Well, he became a starting center fielder for the New York Mets with hard work, and that resonates amongst the fans. So I think that's something that from the perspective of keeping a guy or having a guy here that we feel like wants to be here and we can embrace and we feel embraces us, I think that works perfectly. And the other element, which I think is very important, and you guys kind of touched on it, is the drop-off if the Mets didn't bring back Brandon Nimmo. You maybe have to make a trade. If you look at the free agent market, whether it's corner outfielders or even like a center fielder type, the drop-off was tremendous. And I think you have to pay whatever the market value is to be able to retain an important piece. You know, the Mets trying to fill in a center field next year with Kevin Kiermaier or, you know, bringing back Kevin Pillar. Now, that wasn't going to cut it. That's not going to cut it unless you're bringing in, you know, Aaron Judge type of offense. And, you know, the Mets weren't doing that. So I think it's the perfect move, not just for the team, but for the fans and the player. And, yes, they're going to have to probably eat a couple years near the end of the deal. But maybe by then, you know, $20 million for a year for a player will be what your standard bench player, you know, gets paid in 8 years.
Yeah, exactly. We shall see how it goes, and hopefully he continues to get better and better. I mean, Rich, is it crazy to say that this is still a developing baseball player?
I'm sorry, Sam, was that for me?
Yeah, Rich, go ahead.
The question was a developing.
Absolutely. I'm wondering whether – like when you look at Brandon Nimmo, that he still is actually kind of a developing baseball player and that he could possibly, like, this could not necessarily be his ceiling.
Agreed. No, agreed. I think I would sacrifice, and this year, you know, he went down about 30 points, 35 points in on base percentage. I'd sacrifice that if he could add a little more power. And he certainly has the potential. And, you know, last year, he had 16 home runs. He could probably be a 20 home run guy, you know, for the next three or four seasons, at least, you know, 20 or low 20s. And I'd love to see him try to steal a few bases. I mean, he certainly got the speed. I did a piece for Mesmerized on speed, and he's the fastest Met in terms of sprint speed. And he's like, I don't know, like maybe 50th in Major League Baseball overall, but he is the fastest Met, and he has what is considered elite sprint speed. So I'd like to see him add that element to his game, especially with the rule changes that, you know, will limit pickoffs and the bases are a bit closer. So, but I think you're right. I think there are aspects of his game that could only get better. He'll be 30 in the middle of the season, so he still has a couple of years to hit his absolute prime. Most guys these days peak around 32, 33, so he could certainly add a little more power, maybe a few more stolen bases. Continue his, you know, his arm probably won't get a lot better, but he can certainly continue to hone his craft in the outfield. So sure, I think his ceiling is higher than what we've seen. Absolutely.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to go back to pitching because we did talk about the starting pitching, but we didn't mention Kodai Senga. And I'm going to start with you, John. This is somebody I want the Mets to scoop up right away. But, you know, this stuff sometimes takes time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're 100% right there. I mean, they need to add, in my opinion, a third type of starter. I look at the rotation they had last year, and they're minus Jacob deGrom, they're minus Chris Bassitt, and they're minus Taijuan Walker. They've replaced two of them. I really feel strongly that they need to replace the third. And I think Senga has got the ability to be really a good, solid number three. And, you know, you look at his track record in Japan, obviously we don't know 100% how that's going to translate in Major League Baseball. And a lot of this is, you know, folklore and stories we hear and, you know, analysis from people that have watched him pitch, and we're picking and choosing who we're going to believe. So, you know, it is a little bit of a guessing game. But at the same time, I mean, I can't see too many other pitchers that I'd rather see the Mets sign that really aren't like back of the rotation dudes. You know, looking at, you know, the Ross Striplings of the world. I don't think the Mets are necessarily getting themselves better there. And I think Senga has a ceiling that, you know, if you look at it, for the majority of his time in Japan, more strikeouts than innings, seemed to, you know, be good in regards to not giving up as much hits, didn't give up a ton of home runs. I think it's a worthwhile gamble for the Mets, and probably one where they won't have to pay $20 million a season. And I think if you guarantee, you know, year number five in there, it seems like from a standpoint of hearing his camp, they seem intrigued about New York. They seem that, like, they believe that, you know, New York with the Mets is a situation where they're really trying to win, and I think that's what he wants. Hey, go out there, you know, Billy Epler, and get this thing done already. I'd like to see him where they aren't in the blue with the Mets.
Same here, Rich. When looking at this, like this could be the, you know, with all these veteran signings, how old is he? Let's see. And yeah, they are talking about it being about $15 million a year, most likely. That's the prediction right now. Rich, do you know how old this kid is? Because I don't see it right in front of me too quickly.
I believe he's in his late 20s. I think he's like 20.
I think he's 29 now.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, with some of the concerns we have about the rotation and the age part, this would just be absolutely fantastic and could be like the sleeper ace of the staff, quite possibly.
I agree. If you watched Hot Stove this week, you saw Duquette. Well, you saw two things. I fell in love with Senga when I saw the video of him in the World Baseball Classic. His sinker, his forkball, is just devastating. It falls off the table. I mean, it's crazy. It looks like Mike Scott, you know, in the cheating year of 86. Literally, the movement on that thing is insane. You know, he throws in the high 90s. He adds in the forkball. So while he's never pitched, you know, obviously in the U.S. major leagues, it's hard to imagine that his stuff would not play well here. I mean, if you're throwing 97, 98 with a ghost forkball after that, and apparently he's got a slider as well, it's like, come on, you know, I think this guy will play well here. So I agree with John, I agree with you, Sam. He is right now my number one, you know, target of the next move to make. I keep stalking my Twitter thinking, you know, that this could be the minute where they sign him. But Senga, to me, would slot in nicely as a number three starter, like we've talked about, moving Quintana to four, moving Carrasco to five. I could live with that rotation. Absolutely would love it. I know Duquette said that some people say that Senga profiles better as a reliever. I don't see that. He's a starter in Japan. His stuff is great. I don't see why he'd be a reliever. But anyway, just thought I'd throw that in the conversation. Push Quintana to four. Push Carrasco to five. Then I think you just need – well, you have it. You know, you have Peterson and McGill. If somebody goes down, they could slot in. So you have two insurance plans. You might be going there later, but I'm a little disappointed. They, you know, can't have everything, right? I'm a little disappointed they didn't retain Trevor Williams, who I think is the quintessential swingman. And when I saw that he signed with the Nationals today, I was like, ah, you know. But anyway, yes, Senga is my number one target right now.
Yeah, I will yield the floor to you, Rich. I think I had some other specific thing that I wanted to talk about after Senga, but I'm kind of spacing, so I'll give the floor to you.
About, well, okay, so right now I think what we have to think about is rounding out the bullpen, right? I think, right, and then another thing I want to throw out for you guys is offensively. Now, yes, I know this might sound crazy. I read today the Mets might be in on Correa, Carlos Correa. I love that. I absolutely, if they get Senga and Correa, then really all you have to do is add one or two more arms. I say all, but that's, you know, a lot, Senga and Correa. You maybe want to add one or two more bullpen arms, maybe bring back an Ottavino, who I think you can get cheap and short because of his age. But I think we have to think about that. You know, I think we have to think about, okay, so the Mets really haven't touched the offense. The offense was okay last year, excuse me. It was okay. Generally, it was okay. But they haven't made it better. So I've heard there – in fact, I saw a couple hours ago that that rumor is there in discussions with Correa. If that should happen, he said he would play third base only to play for the Mets because he wants to play with Lindor. A lot of that going around, right? Baez and now Correa. And so – he said he would move to third base. Now, granted, a lot of money, all of that. They could dump – now you have to start thinking about dumping salary if they do that. You'd have to think about trying to dump McCann. You might not dump all the salary, but you might dump most of it or some of it. Escobar would go – pardon me. Escobar would go and, again, dump some of that, if not all of it. They'd have to start thinking about dumping some salary because they'd be – they'd be pushing $400 million, like 370 at that point, if you add Correa and Senga. But I think that's something to think about. So the question is that I'm throwing out to you guys, it's the same offensive team. Is that okay? Maybe it is. Is it not? Would you like to have Correa? Of course, we'd love to have him, but do you think it's reasonable? That's my question.
I will first say that that would just be heaven, really, when you think about it, because it automatically beefs this lineup up, which a lot of people think was the problem by the end of the season. And, you know, it kind of also I would like them to have a DH, but that might end up being Alvarez sometimes with Vogelback. You know, who knows how they're going to play that. So it's a very interesting proposition. I think you're right that then they would have to try to figure out how to unload Escobar and McCann. I think McCann's definitely a major priority to get off this team. And, yeah, John.
Yeah, I think about what you guys said. Number one, I want to throw in Trevor Williams going to the Nationals, and I'll be real quick with this. I actually think it's a good thing. Because you imagine the Nationals on their way to 100 loss season again at the trading deadline. What might take anything for Trevor Williams? You give him a couple lottery tickets around the trading deadline, and all of a sudden you add Trevor Williams for the last couple months of the season. So that's something to think about. But you know, in regards to, let's say, a Correa, to me I look at it as more of like a pipe dream. You know, unless the Mets are going to blow everybody out of the water again. You're looking at like a 8-year deal for, you know, 35 plus million a season or something like that. That's probably what it's going to take. You know, I don't think Carlos Correa, in regards to his preference, is to take a short-term deal to come to the Mets to play third base. So, you know, in the end, you're going to have to win the bidding war there. And I don't know if it's practical. I mean, if you want to do it, obviously, you know, you have the owner that has the most money, but if you do that, You gotta forget about worrying about where you're at with the luxury tax. You know, there's no worrying about, hey, let's dump off players to make sure we got money to be able to do it. You know, the decision's been made. You know, Steve Cohen at that point would have decided he could care less about any luxury tax threshold you could throw his way. He would have at that point absolutely made the decision that there is no salary cap, there is no threshold, just spend whatever it takes to bring a World Series championship to Queens, which is obviously what we all want to see. You know, listen, they definitely need to add a reliever or two. I think we all agree Ottavino would be a very good fit. to me, I think they can get a deal with him done today if they just guarantee the second year. And if he could pitch anywhere near what he pitched last year for the Mets in 2023, that second year isn't going to really matter that much. I think this is a team that on paper right now is, you know, assuming they add another starting pitcher, assuming they finish off their bullpen like we expect them to do, I think is on par with the Mets were last year when they won 101 games. You know, you look at the Atlanta Braves, they've kind of stayed the same. Philadelphia Phillies obviously adding Trey Turner and Taijuan Walker and Matt Strom. And obviously the energy they've gotten from getting to the World Series last year are going to be certainly more formidable in a regular season. But, you know, sign me up. I mean, I'm looking at this team. I'm excited. I think you're going to see those last couple pieces come together. And I'm looking forward to watching a lot of games this year and hopefully being at a lot of games over at Citi Field with you guys.
Right back at you, John. You know, yeah, just like thinking about while I was talking to you guys during this podcast, I did all of a sudden get a warm feeling just thinking about watching another new baseball game. So, yeah, that is exciting to consider, and it would be even more exciting with Correa at third base. My God. So you have been listening to the Metsian podcast, and we will move on to our final words. And first of all, once again, thank you, John, for joining us, John Pielli of the Past Ball Show. What is your final word?
Well, I think, listen, I think I'll pretty much summarize what I just said a little bit. I think the Mets, I think the tide has turned a little bit. I think if you jumped in a DeLorean and went 365 days ago from the Mets coming off of their 2021 season, which looked good up to a point, but ended up being a major disappointment, losing record, finishing 8 games under 500. But, you know, they've come a long way, not just in regards to record, but in changing of image, changing of the feeling of what it's like to be a Met. You see in players that have come here and, you know, maybe in past years would not think about playing for the Mets. I think some of it has to do with the owner, but some of it has to do with the overall morale around the New York Mets. And I think a guy like Eduardo Escobar meant a lot to that clubhouse, means a lot to that clubhouse. And I think they're in a position where playing for the Mets doesn't seem like a bad thing anymore. And I think this is a team that we could expect to not just be competitive, not that old adage that we used to say years ago, hey, play some meaningful games in September. You know, we're looking at a team that we expect to legitimately be in the mix and bring in a World Series championship. And taking back it off of what I just said, I can't wait. You know, I can't wait to be part of this as a fan and watch everything that they do over the course of the season as they try to bring a long-awaited World Series to Queens.
And thank you again, John, for being on the show tonight. And just a shout-out to Michael Colon out there, who unfortunately couldn't be with us tonight. We would have patched him through, even if we're having some phone issues on Blog Talk Radio's line. But off to Rich. Rich Ferrago, what is your final word?
All in, hyphenated word. Two words, hyphenated. The Mets are all in. You know, this idea that Steve Cohen was going to stop right around the luxury tax, maybe the second tier of luxury tax, or maybe the third tier of luxury tax, all that's in the past now. The Mets are all in on this thing. You could see it. Howie Rose tweeted about it. It's amazing what, you know, 2 years have brought. Remember, Cohen just took over control right before the 2021 season, so it's basically 2 years ago right now. And somebody tweeted a picture of who the Mets brought in before the 2020 season, Christmas time of 2019. It was Porcello, it was Waka, and it was Dellin Betances. Now the Mets have brought in Justin Verlander. You don't have to go through. We just did a podcast on it. You know who the Mets have brought in. The Mets are all in, and it's wonderful. The Mets are becoming the villains of baseball, which is also wonderful. They're the new evil empire. They're becoming that very quickly. But we have an owner who kind of thumbs his nose at that. He doesn't care. You know, he wants a championship. He'll use the resources he has to bring a championship. And frankly, it's no different than what the Yankees did in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It's okay to lead the league in payroll. Other teams have done it. The Dodgers are very close these days, if not at the top, and they're consistently there. So why can't the Mets do it? Why is it wrong for the Mets? I see all this hate on Twitter about the Mets spending all this money. The Mets are all in, and it feels great. It's been so long since we have rooted for a team that was literally going to stop at nothing to bring a championship. Whether or not they get one is obviously TBD. But doesn't it feel great, like John said, to know that the team that we root for has put its chips on the table and is not done yet and is committed to winning? 2 years ago, the DeLorean, as John said, 2 years ago, We wouldn't even have thought about saying those words. But now our team is – they're the villains. They're all in on this thing. They want to win. They're spending to do it, and I love it. My final word.
Thank you, Rich. We greatly appreciate it. And, my final word is – oh, man. My final word is real hope. Because in the past, I think Wilpon especially, Jeff Wilpon, kind of hid behind this underdog image. Just think about him handing those T-shirts out. This is much more real than the idea that, like, a scrappy bunch or you know, you don't always want to be rooting for just the Bad News Bears, I guess, you know, that they're going to be able to beat the mighty Yankees. So, finally, we may be able to beat the New York Yankees. And, you know, I'd open up a can of worms by saying I think it's the only team you want to see and want to beat. I understand that Mets fans would be scared of that, but that's the ultimate prize is 1955, if you will. And you got to yearn for that, even if it might be devastating to see again and happen again over and over and over. It's always same old Mets. Well, finally, we might actually have a team that could beat the mighty Yankees and not have all these what-ifs like you have with 2000 and 2015 and 1973. So, real hope finally here because of Steve Cohen. Yay. And that's our show. Thank you all. Thank you, John. Thank you, Rich. Take care. Let's go, Mets.
Let's go, Mets. Good night, everybody.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Sam.